The show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Oh, hi. Welcome to the program. Oh, working on all kinds of technical stuff here. But hey, you know what? We're on the air, which is great. It is the big show. It's Bucket Strategy Investing, and we're continuing with our centuries-long tradition now. We got more of the best in money information. That's coming up for you this hour. Professor Rick Plum here with me. I'm Johnny Dean. We're here from Lucia Capital Group talking about a whole bunch of things this hour, including the importance of tax location. Now, this is sort of a follow-up from yesterday's discussion, tax location. We were talking about tax brackets yesterday. Tax location. Now, what does that mean? Well, you've heard us talk about asset location, all right? How it relates to tax strategy. And as it turns out, tax location goes hand in hand with a lot of that. Some assets are taxed at a different rate than other assets, and knowing how they're taxed can give you an idea of where you need to put them. But, of course, it all depends on your individual situation. Doesn't it always? Of course. We'll explain all of this, or at least as much as we can, coming up here on the program in just a bit. Now, you need to take a part in this extravaganza as well, your duty to do so. Ask your money questions at our in-studio hotline, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You can also head over to wealthed.com. You send us an email or two or three. Click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. We'll get to some of those either this hour or next hour. Maybe both. Who knows? But either way, you're going to reach the Brain Trust, and you'll get your questions answered via the phone or on the emails. We greet our professor, Rick Plum, from Lucia Capital Group. Once again, as we bring him back for a little bit more, here's some decent advice. Can I say this? Sure. You need to get a strategy. You need one that addresses each of your needs, one that aims to make sure it's done right the first time, one that could maybe anticipate what might go wrong and provide you with some kind of a defense against all of that. You can call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group at this phone number, 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. You need a bucket strategy, all right? I'll tell you that. And the Brain Trust advisors will put one together for you. You can talk to any of them about your financial future. Get your financial plan in order. Off the air at Lucia Capital Group again, 800-644-1150. On the air, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Talking a lot about taxes this week.
It's that time of year.
Sure, but people are thinking about it. But it's not just to think about as you're going through trying to get last year's taxes done, because for many people, you know, the strategies that to lower their taxes are pretty much gone.
But and it's very common for people to go through their taxes right now, complain, you know, moan,
yeah, exactly.
Do whatever, and then do nothing about it. Yeah. To make it any different for the next year.
Yeah, and that's kind of like me when I complained. I said, you know.
This does sound very familiar when you're saying, I owe money again this year,
right,
and
exactly.
I need to do something about that, and then I don't hear from you for, 11 months, and then about April, March of next year, I'm going to hear the same thing again.
Yeah, you hear it again. You hear me saying, well, I really got to do something. And then in July, you know, I really should. I got to do something with withholding, you know. I did raise the 401k contribution, but it wasn't enough necessarily to make a difference.
Well, when you raise the 401k contribution, it also lowers the withholding on your paycheck.
Yes, it does that.
So if you were not withholding enough to begin with,
well,
just adding money to the 401k by itself is not going to make up the difference. Yes, it's going to lower your tax bill, but it also lowers your withholding.
Yeah, it does. Now, I should say that my withholding wasn't the problem as much as it was my wife's. Because, again, this is how
it works. And you're not going to be able to get that one to change.
Well, unless you fill out the forms that say take X number of extra dollars out.
Apply a flat extra per paycheck.
Right, exactly. And that's really the way that it needs to be done. But, you know,
well, we're
getting the forms and all that. But anyway, people do need to understand that when you withhold from your paycheck, your withholding, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, is based on you making that by yourself.
Well, it
in
depends
other
words,
on
whether you're going
single.
No, as a married person, they're looking at two people with the same incomes. So if you're making $30,000 and your spouse is making $30,000, you know, then the withholding is probably going to be very, very close to where you need it to be. But if you're making $30,000 and your spouse is making $300,000, the withholding on the lower spouse is not going to be anywhere near the actual tax on that $30,000.
Yes. Now, the one making $300,000 will have their withholding adjusted accordingly. But it's still going to create a problem, especially if you put you up into the next tax bracket. So we're going to talk about tax location, what that means. And really, we're going to answer the question at some time this hour as to why the tax bracket actually matters. Why do you need to know what bracket you're in? And again, this is a follow-up on some of the stuff we talked about yesterday, explaining how these tax brackets work. I think we eventually did get to the whole idea of if you get a bonus, right? We did talk about that.
We talked that it doesn't necessarily have a new tax bracket throughout. And we hinted and kind of touched on the idea that the withholding on a bonus may be a lot different than the withholding on your regular paycheck. And a lot of people think withholding is the taxes. No, withholding is just a guess on what you're going to owe. So we haven't really gotten too deep into that. But
No. So we'll cover much of that. All right, 877-PLANNER. We'll take a few calls because we got folks on hold. Don't want to leave them on hold too long. 877-752-6637. We're moving along first. Let's go to Orlando. Mike. Hello, Mike. How can we help you today? I think. Actually, I don't hear anything there.
Mike's having too much fun at Disney World.
Well, that could be. Although, I don't know, maybe we were having some technical difficulties earlier. That could be our phones. Well, hold on a second.
Great.
Mike, stick around. We'll see if you're there, if it's your end or our end. All right, well, then in the meantime, let's hold off. I do have three lines open, actually. 877-PLANNER, PLANNER. Maybe that's the one that Mike had left. I don't know. All right, well, I asked the question. Let's ask it and let's answer it now. Why does the tax bracket matter at all?
Well, it matters because it's the first step in understanding if you even have an ability to manage your tax liability. We all want to pay less in taxes, but paying less in taxes is not just a one-time, here and now only type of an issue. We want to pay less in taxes over the rest of our life if possible. And sometimes the best way to manage a tax bill is to pay a little more today and pay less later on, mm-hmm. versus paying a lot less today and paying more for the rest of your life. So the first step in managing one of the biggest expenses that we have, and definitely one of the bigger expenses that we have and we don't like, is understanding how the taxation works. That's why it's important to understand where the tax brackets are. Should I be doing more 401k, like John talked about earlier? Is that the biggest bang for my buck? Or should I be doing more Roth-type investments for the future and just suck it up for today? Where should I be looking at enhancing or managing my problem? And so the first step in basically treating any problem is understanding the problem. And so unfortunately, we've seen a lot of people that, you know, I hate my tax bracket. I'm in a horrible tax bracket. When we get into it, they pay very little in taxes. And what they've been doing is, you know, funding these IRAs and 401ks and deferred accounts and deferred annuities and all this stuff. And so that in the future, the 100% of their money is going to be coming from these deferred areas. They're going to be in a very high tax bracket when they retire because they may have pensions and all these other issues. And while they don't like the bracket they're in today, they don't even know what bracket they're in. But we're so conditioned. We've always heard that everybody, you pay too much in taxes. You pay too much in taxes. Yeah, but you may end up paying more if you don't understand how it's going to work. So unfortunately, you have to take a little bit of an understanding. That's why we spent some time yesterday talking about brackets and the fact that some money is not taxed at all. The next block of money is taxed in a 10% bracket. The next block of money is in the 15, 25, 28, 33, and on up the way. And if you're so blessed to be making more than $500,000-$600,000 a year, you're in the 39.6% federal income tax bracket, unless you have a lot of deductions. So it's just one of those areas we have to understand. How much of a benefit am I going to get? You know, John was talking about increasing his 401k. I increase it by $1,000. How much of a benefit am I actually going to get by increasing it by that $1,000? Am I getting a 39.6% advantage or higher if I live in a state that has a nasty state income tax as well? Or am I getting a 10% advantage for doing that $1,000? So where are we going to get the bang for our buck? And so we want to be able to understand the brackets. But understanding the brackets is only one side of the equation.
Exactly.
The other side is, where is the income coming from? Not all income is created equally. Not all income is taxed equally. Some income has a preferential tax treatment. Unfortunately, not all of us have enough of that other lower taxed income as much as we would like.
No. Unfortunately, when you get your paycheck at your job or whatever it is, that income is taxed at the highest ordinary income rates you can.
It's taxed at ordinary income rates and subject to FICA, Social Security tax.
Yes.
Whether you're self-employed, which is double the FICA, or whether you're an employee of a company where you see half of the cost and your employer pays half the cost, you're going to pay income tax, ordinary, and you're going to pay FICA, Medicare taxes on that money. That's an expensive hit.
Yeah, it is. And we'll cover this question maybe a little bit later on in the program if we have time. But I had asked this, and I know other people have said this too, which is why would you put assets that are taxed, say, at the preferential rate? Let's say a capital gain.
Long-term asset. Capital gains.
Long-term capital gains. You've got stocks you've held for a long time, or you've got real estate or something. Why would you ever want to put those assets inside of a vehicle that only allows ordinary income taxes upon removal?
Well, there may be a reason. In today's economic environment, there may be a good reason to do it.
There may be. Now, of course, for many people, there may not be. So this is why what we mean when we talk about tax location, asset location, and all that. Things to think about. Got taxes coming up, but you can certainly plan ahead for next year. Okay, well, I think we got our phones back. We're going to talk to Mike when we come back. And others, we just got some lines open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, Bucket Strategy Investing with the Brain Trust, continues after this. Talking about your money, 877-PLANNER. We got some folks on hold. We're going to go right to the calls, 877-752-6637. More emails coming up as well. If you go to our website, wealthed.com, at the Find Your Answer link, you can send us an email. Ask us your questions. We got a lot to get to this hour, and we're going to talk more about some of these taxes and understanding tax brackets and all that stuff. It is important stuff. That's why we talk about it. But we're going back to the phones, 877-PLANNER. All right, let's see. Mike in Orlando will try again. Hi, Mike. How can we help you today?
I'm a long-term listener, first-time caller. Got a tax question for you.
Okay.
Love the show. I bought a condo last week of the last week of December in 2014. Rented it January 1st, the whole year of 2015, and the first couple of months of 2016. Now my plan is either to live in it or to sell it at some future date, but not to rent it again. So I'm looking in this transaction. I paid $290,000 for the condo and also had a purchased all the furnishings, appliances, and all the furniture for the condo for $50,000. My question is, if I accelerate the depreciation to 200% versus straight line, how will that affect, if I don't plan on renting it again, how does that affect my depreciation recovery?
Oh, then you'll just recover more depreciation.
At what tax rate, though?
Up to 25%. Now, with the accelerated depreciation, I don't think that they're going to recapture it higher, but it's whatever it would be, ordinary income capped off at 25% on depreciation recapture. Now, because of the accelerated side, and this is where I'm not an accountant, there may be, because you can't really, it's hard to do accelerated depreciation nowadays, I mean, I don't know all the rules on the accelerated, but depreciation recapture is at a maximum rate of 25%. So if you're depreciating $10,000-$15,000 a year, and so instead of that you do $30,000 a year, you hopefully write it off at a nice level, and then you could recapture it back at anything up to 25%, depending on what other incomes you have.
Mm-hmm. And if I wind up at some future date selling the condo, including the furnishings, but I only depreciated for 1 year, I wouldn't be liable for anything beyond that 1 year of depreciation.
Well, if you stop using it as a rental, then there's no further depreciation. So, but if you just decide not to take the depreciation, where I've seen this happen a lot, where people will rent it out and they don't want the hassle of the accounting of the depreciation, so they just don't take it. Well, the IRS is going to assume that you took it and they're going to tax you on the depreciation anyway. But if it's not a rental anymore, you turn it into a vacation house, a second house, even your primary residence, then you don't depreciate it anymore, and so there's no recovery on depreciation that you weren't supposed to take in the first place.
The only recovery would be what I did take.
Yes.
And even though, now let's say it's after 5 years, so now there's zero value in the furniture.
Well, then when you sell it with the furniture, you get to recapture the whole thing. If you sell it, obviously, for more than what you bought it for, you're going to have a little bit of gain and a whole depreciation recapture. But if you sell it, 5 years from now, and for some reason we're back in a tailspin, and you sell the whole thing for $230,000, you wouldn't have any depreciation recapture on that level.
Okay.
But yeah, you're gonna recapture it, assuming you sell it for higher than your basis. Every time you depreciate it, you reduce your basis.
Right. Yeah. Well, I suppose the point I was looking at, if you didn't sell the furniture, let's say you donated it, and fair market value happened to be $7,000 or $8,000 at, you know, that point in time, 4 or 5 years down the road.
Accelerated depreciation, I think, will come back on that situation.
How about straight line?
I don't believe straight line does, but this, again, is a tax accountant question. Because this is a very specific, you know, technical area of tax accounting. But I do believe that there is some, if you accelerate the depreciation and then give it away, that the accelerated depreciation comes back as a recapture. I'm not sure on the other side.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Sorry, Mike, this is another one of those reasons where accountants are worth their
well, maybe,
definitely
yeah.
worth their weight.
Yeah, and we haven't talked about this for a long time. Maybe we need to...
Well, we don't see accelerated depreciation very often anymore.
No, it's always been straight line. At least it hasn't come up on this program. I'm sure there are people that are still doing it.
The ability to separate, you know, you buy a property, a residential property is allowed to be depreciated over 27 and a half years, but you buy other things within the property that have a shorter life expectancy, and then, so you can depreciate them over a quicker period of time. That's not accelerated. That's just, you know,
it's
using
a different acceleration a different
depreciation table,
right,
for the different asset. And so that would, but how much is or isn't, so it'd be really nice. Okay, I paid $450,000 for the furniture, and I take it as a deduction, and then I give it away.
How do you do that?
I mean, now do I have to recapture anything? I mean, what's my basis in it?
Yeah, that's a good, all right. Well,
that's where the accountants really earn their
weight. There you go.
Weight.
We'll have to have one on our show one time. Okay, let's move along. Ted is up next in Seattle, Washington. Hi, Ted.
Hi, good morning. Just another quick accounting question, please. And it has to do with 401k programs. When you fund your, make your annual contribution, and because of the, I guess, the, what they call the highly compensated
HCE,
you might receive a refund for that year's contribution.
Correct.
You know, in the following first quarter of the year, following your contribution time.
Right.
Why is that money counted as dividend income or, you know, long-term capital gain as opposed to ordinary income?
I didn't think it was. I thought it was ordinary income.
Well, I did too, but on the form that I received from the administrator of the program, and on the tax form, it appears as if you account for that money as a long-term capital gain, and it just doesn't make sense to me.
That doesn't make any sense to me at all, and that's not the way I understood it to be. I understood it to be a distribution from the plan, taxable as ordinary income, although done correctly, no penalty, because it's not technically subject to the penalty, because it's basically a removal of an excess contribution. You weren't allowed to put that much money into the plan, but you didn't realize that, or your company didn't realize that until after the fact, so they flushed it back out to you. There's no way in logic that should be long-term capital gain. I don't know what they're doing to make it long-term capital gain. It shouldn't
be. The only rationale I could come up with, and obviously I'm going to have to do more research and ask some other folks about it, but is that you had access to that money in your plan for a year to possibly utilize it as for investment purposes, and there was a gain associated with
But the other side of that is when you put the money into the plan, let's say that I'm allowed to put in 10 and I put in 15, and they kick 5 back out. I took a deduction from ordinary income for the 15, full 15, and then they kicked out 5. It should come out as ordinary income.
Yeah, I agree. Well, I'll have to do some other checking, so at least
good luck.
Maybe I'm thinking as an all straight. So.
If you find out anything, let us know, okay?
Okay, thanks.
All right, Ted, thank you for the call. Interesting situations.
Yeah, that should be ordinary income. I don't know what they're doing to claim it's something else.
Yeah, either we're missing something or somebody made a mistake somewhere along the line, but... 401k, of course. You deducted it all at that ordinary income rate,
the entire amount. He's being hit by the highly compensated employee rules.
Mm-hmm. HCE. Maybe we can just explain what those are, perhaps, when we come back. Anything else that's on your mind? We have 3 lines open right now. Give us a call, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877
752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the Brain Trust standing by, answering your money questions as we are every day right here on Bucket Strategy Investing. All right, it is Bucket Strategy Investing, taking your calls, your emails, and all that stuff, answering your money questions here on the program as we do every day, and your emails, we get to those coming up in just a little bit. A lot of stuff to talk about here between now and the top of the hour. Now, we may not be able to get to everything because, you know, we only have a few minutes per call and a few minutes per email, and that's just kind of the nature of this, of how this works. But if you really want to get into the heart of the matter, and you want to get into sort of the weeds and learn all about retirement income strategies, you can do that. And there's a there's another opportunity for you coming up this Saturday. That's right, April 9th, Houston, Texas. Everyone watching, listening in Houston, Texas can join the Brain Trust. Meet Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the local advisors there in Houston. If you go to WealthEd, our website, you can go there right now, WealthEd.com. The space is limited, but we'll make as much room as we can for everybody. You go there at the live events tab, click on that, just say, hey, we're coming. It's me, or by myself, or I got 10 people, whatever it is. We'll make room for you. Just show up there, learn all about, as I said, retirement income strategies, and get your money questions answered. There's a Q&A afterward where it can be about the topic, which a lot of which has to do with buckets, or anything else that's on your mind, Social Security, retirement, annuities, planning, saving for college, home sales, required minimum distributions. We get a lot of questions on that stuff. And anything that's on your mind, you can certainly ask the Brain Trust or just collar one of them right after the show and ask them privately. It really doesn't matter. That's why we're there. Houston, Texas, this Saturday, April 9th. And I should remind you again that Santa Clara, California is happening at the end of April. We got a few weeks yet for that. April 30th, mark that down in your calendars. You can just go right now to WealthEd.com and sign up. We will remind you as we get closer to that date. But Houston, coming up this Saturday, would love to see you there. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. We were talking about tax brackets and why the tax brackets matter. Now, Professor Plum, when you the question came up about putting capital assets, I don't want to confuse people who don't understand what this means, but if you have an asset that's taxed at a capital gains rate, whether it's a stock or a piece of property or whatever it is, you have one that's taxed at a lower income, a lower tax rate, and we're talking long-term capital gains.
Yes.
Lower tax rate than your ordinary income tax.
Right. If I receive $10,000 in long-term capital gains, the tax on that is less than the tax on $10,000 of ordinary interest, if I earn interest.
Income.
Ordinary interest, I'm just talking about interest
on
a bond.
Okay. Yeah.
Or a wage, or passive income from real estate. $10,000 of income from bonds, real estate, from net real estate, from my wages, that's taxed at a higher bracket than $10,000 of capital gains, long-term capital gains, if they fall on the same level. So why wouldn't I always want to have capital gains if possible and qualified dividends? And that's one of the problems with the tax code, you know, trying to be, you know, the idea of simplifying it and changing it to a flat tax. What does constitute income? And if it is income, what kind of income is it?
Uh-huh.
And how is it going to be taxed? And so when we're looking at managing a tax liability, in many respects, we're looking at how much in taxes are we actually going to pay on that revenue that was generated from whatever it was, a job, interest, capital gains, qualified dividends, or rental property, net rental property. Where does it fall and how does it fall in the tax brackets? There are times where I'm in the 15% income tax bracket, but I'm right at the top of it. So my ordinary income and interest and other incomes fill up my 15% bracket, and then I create a long-term gain, and it's on top of the other income, and it's actually in a different tax bracket, so it's being charged a different rate. So is it doing me any good? And well, it's just a matter of understanding it and seeing if we can manage it somehow. What makes more sense? Reducing income here, increasing it here, or vice versa? Do I want to, you know, how do I go about managing my portfolio?
Now, if you have something like stocks, ordinarily, if you just own them personally, a stock, and you sell it, and you've held it for more than a year, and when I talk about capital gains, I'm going to make an assumption that we're talking long term.
Okay.
Okay, because this makes it a little bit easier to explain. You have a stock, if you hold it personally, and you sell it, you have long-term capital gains. And let's say you're in the correct income tax bracket, $10,000 stock is going to cost you $1,500 in taxes.
That's it, you know, that's if I'm in the higher than 15% income tax bracket.
Right. Now, if you're in the 15% income tax bracket,
it costs me nothing in taxes.
Right.
It's a zero bracket. Or on the other side, if I'm making, you know, Kardashian type money, it's in a 23% bracket.
Okay, well, you could have picked somebody else, but I get what you mean.
Everybody knew who I meant.
Okay, fine. You could have said Bill Gates or Buffett or something like that. Okay, but let's
that's what Buffett does, and that's one of the reasons why his tax bracket, on average, is less than the people that work for him, on average. Because he takes a lot of his income in the form of stock sale and other areas.
Of course.
Not salary, whereas a lot of the people that work for him, their entire income or the majority of their income is from salary.
Which is taxed at a higher rate.
Yes.
Okay, so now, but if I own that same stock inside my traditional IRA, where I deducted it going in, when I take that money, when I
take the
that
money
stock out,
that's
when
the
I
key.
Take, yes.
But in the meantime,
I'm paying ordinary income tax rate.
But if I have a stock that I paid $10 for and it grows and I sell it at $14, mm-hmm. I don't pay any tax right now. So I get to reinvest the $14 in the IRA and let it continue to compound on the mm-hmm. full value versus a lesser value, even a 15% lesser value of the gain. And so when we're talking about tax location, should I be buying my assets, my growth assets in my IRA, or should I be buying them in my personal account? It somewhat depends on where you are and what stage of life you're in. For a lot of people, they're looking at buying their long-term capital gains inside their IRAs. Well, because 99% of their portfolio should be long-term gain. And so no matter whether they're buying it personally or not. But even as you get out a little bit where you have both personal money and long-term capital gain type investments, in many respects, we should be looking at owning the capital asset inside the IRA. Now, this is not true for a retiree, in my opinion, for most retirees. But for if I have the choice, how much in taxes am I going to defer? How much am I not having to pay in taxes right away by having it inside my IRA versus having my bonds in my IRA? If my allocation calls for some amount of money into an income-producing account and some amount of money into an IRA, which way should I own them? Should I own the capital asset inside my IRA or the capital asset in my personal account? And right now, with the interest rates being so low on the scale, it actually goes against what we used to talk about, always put stocks personally. When you're looking to grow an asset over time, this is, again, not for somebody taking an income. This is for somebody who's looking to grow. How much in taxes am I able to eliminate or defer going forward? If I'm earning 3% on a bond fund, even at ordinary income rates of 25%, that's I'm losing 0.75% of it to taxes. If I'm in a stock account and I'm expecting to average 8%, 10%, or whatever the number is, and I'm in the 25% tax bracket, then I'm only losing 15%. But that 15% of 10,000 or 10% is still a bigger number than 25% of a little number.
Okay,
is this making any sense?
Well, if you've never heard
this
before, I
lost 0.75% of my return.
Okay.
In the one side, and 1.5% of my return on the other side.
Now you're putting these inside your IRA,
or not? So this is where people. It's all about what the dollar amounts. If I have a 3% bond fund in my personal account, I'm losing 0.75% of my value every year to taxes. 25% of that 3%.
Yes, that's ordinary income you're talking
right.
about.
But on the other side, if I have my stock portfolio in my growth portfolio in my IRA, mm-hmm. I'm deferring and I'm not paying taxes. Now the taxes as a percentage are less, but because I expect so much better of a return from the growth side of it, let's say I do expect a 10% rate of return. Again, this is an expectation. I'm losing 15% of that return to long. If it were held personally, I'd lose 1.5% of my principal because of the taxation.
If you sold it.
If ongoing sales. So I'm losing more.
Yes.
I'm losing more. I'm deferring more by having the growth in my IRA.
Now, at some point, somebody's going to have to pay taxes on that.
Right, and then we turn it around, and the allocation changes. I'm getting close to retirement. I'm now retired, and I need to draw an income. When I'm drawing an income, I want to have the income assets in the IRA mm-hmm. because they're taxed the same way either way. I'm taking that 3%, 4% out of the bond fund, 100% is taxable. So is the money coming out of the IRA, 100% taxable. Yeah. I'm no longer growing the account.
And that's where the, I don't know, the older advice or whatever, the rules that used to happen.
Well, there was two sets of older rules. One was always defer everything. So by definition, you always put your growth accounts at all times in your IRAs. It didn't matter what age you were, what strategy you were using, what phase of life you're in.
I never quite understood
always did
that
because you never want to touch your IRA. And then with taxation, back in the days when we got higher rates of return on our bonds, it was, well, let's change that and put our capital gain assets in our personal account and income assets in our IRAs. That worked really well when we used to be able to get a return
until the
on ordinary income items.
Right.
Now we can't. And so for now, especially for that middle-aged person, 40, 45, where they have some potential bonds in their portfolio and stocks, having the stocks in the IRA isn't the worst thing in this case until you retire.
Yeah, and I know that's a lot of stuff, and it's it can be difficult to get your head around. If you have questions on it, you can give us a call. Or your advisor should be telling you this stuff anyway, which is what we're doing on this program. 877-PLANNER. More of your emails and your phone calls. Lines open when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing, got another hour coming up. So if you're listening live, you'll know that there's a whole other hour of stuff that we haven't even covered yet. More emails, more phone calls. Don't forget as well, Houston, Texas, we'll remind you one more time, coming up here this Saturday, Meet the Brain Trust, Professor Plum in Houston, Texas. You're going to say hi to everybody. You get to meet the professor. You get to meet Terry Keyes. You get to meet all the local advisors. But as most importantly, as nice a guy as he is, you're going to get your questions answered. So once again, in Houston, sign up. We'll remind you one more time, this Saturday, April 9th, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com. Okay, there will be more coming up. Check WealthEd for the different locations. Let's move along. We've got some folks on hold. Move to Larry up next in San Jose. Hi, Larry.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Yeah, I just want to get kind of a second opinion. I'm 35. I'm a government employee, so I qualify for a 2% at 60 pension. They also have a 457 plan I contribute to. I maxed out the last two or three years. I'm at about 100K there. I got a Roth, and I maxed out last year, so I'm at about 5 there. Then I just bought 5 individual positions in a taxable account, about 20 over there. I'm a saver by nature, but I want to know if maybe I'm putting money too many places, or I still kind of want to enjoy life, maybe buy a home and some things like that. But just want to get your thoughts.
Well, with the plan through the government, so you don't work for the federal government, you work for the state?
Correct.
So the 457, does it have any matching contribution to it at all?
Yeah, they only give me about $100 a month. It's a dollar. It's a set dollar amount.
Oh, so it's not if you put in a dollar, they put in a dollar. They're going to put the $100 in no matter what.
Correct.
Because we first off never want to give up free money. Now you've got some competing issues. It is nice. You're obviously making a pretty good income to be able to save that kind of cash, and so you've got a pretty high tax bracket. Even though you're 35, you're young. You got some time to go. So I do like the tax deduction, but you've got a competing goal here. You want to buy a house in the not too distant future. When might you want to buy that property?
Yeah, I'm thinking next, 5 to 7 years.
Okay, 5 to 7 years, good number, good answer. So that means that my first priority would be to fully fund my Roth IRA every year. Get my $100 matching contribution, that's fine. You can do that in your sleep. But then do the $5,500 into the Roth IRA every year. Because after you've had a Roth IRA for at least 5 tax years, and you started last year, so you've already got a head start on that. Once you've had it in for 5 tax years, you can use probably the bulk of the money, if not all of the money, for that first-time home purchase. You can use all of your contributions for any reason at any time you want. So let's say you decide to buy the house 6 years from now. So you put in $5,500 every year for 6 years. You get $33,000 in there of your own money. And let's say it's worth $43,000. The $33,000 can come back out for any reason, anytime. It's your own money. You just have to account for it on the Form 8606. The other $10,000 can come out because it's your first time home purchase. You can take out up to $10,000 from a Roth IRA after 5 years, tax-free and penalty-free. So that's a great way to save for a down payment. Over and above that, because you want to use the money in the not too distant future, well before 55 or anything of that nature, then personal money would be a good game plan. Now, you plan on working for the federal government for a long time, right? Or the state government?
Yeah, I'll retire here.
Okay, so you can't really get to the money other than by a loan or something from the plans at work. Because you have this other goal, I would say get the tax-free money that you can from the 457, and then do as much as you can personally to build up your down payment. If you're looking to buy a property in your neighborhood, San Jose, it's going to take a fairly good down payment, right?
$150,000 a year.
Right, so that tells us we can't get the down payment from the 457. I mean, we could, but it'll be really taxable. You're trading in an ongoing tax for just deferring it for 4 or 5 years. When you're still working, it's not going to do you so much good. The Roth is a great place, and the personal account is going to be the next best place. So focus on those two areas first. Roth first, personal money second. And if you still want to, you know, if you say, look, I'm $150,000 in 5 years, you need to save basically $30,000 a year. If you can save more than that, fine, the 457's there. But get the money on pace in your personal and in an account that's accessible for the goal that you have in mind.
One last question on the taxable account. If I can't afford to buy shares every quarter or, you know, like that. So, I mean, I'm just sitting in a position. It's just, you know, I'm in all dividend stocks. And, I mean, is it really worth it just to rip the dividends and hold these for 20, 30 years?
Well, but this money is not going to be held for 20, 30 years. You're going to use this money in the next 5 or 6 years to buy a house, right?
Well, no, not the taxable money, not the brokerage account, just the Roth.
Okay, well, you can't put enough money in the Roth to really build up a huge down, $100,000 down payment in 5 years.
There's a $5,500 limit.
There's a $5,500 annual limit on that.
Correct.
So you're going to be using the personal account, the taxable account as well, to help fund your down payment.
Okay. Can you talk a little bit about capital gains on that? If I just put it in a couple months ago, so.
Well, I'm not saying to sell it out right now, but let's say you bought a stock for $10 a share. You know, you bought it in October of last year, and you sell it today. It's within a year. If it happens to be at a gain from last October, which would be nice, but not necessarily realistic right now, that gain would be a short-term capital gain, which would be taxed like ordinary income, like interest, like a paycheck almost. If it's a loss, then you can use that loss up to $3,000 to reduce the income from other sources. If you hold on to that stock, you buy it, in October last year for $10 a share, and you hold on to it for a longer period of time and you sell it for $12, $14, $15, $18 a share, somewhere down the line after you've owned it for at least a year, well, then the tax on it's going to be a lot less. Right now, how much income do you make? And are you married or single?
I'm single. I'm at about 90.
Okay, you're in the 28. You're in the 28% federal income tax bracket and the 9.3% state income tax bracket. So you're looking at 37% if it's short-term gain, and you're looking at about 26% if it's long-term gain. So there's about a 10% difference in the tax holding it less than a year, or holding a year or less, or holding it for more than a year. So if you're going to buy stock, you want to hold it for more than a year anyway.
Yeah. Hey, Larry, look, I got to take a break. If you need some more help on this, hang on. We can talk to you during the top of the hour news. We just got to take a break here for the said newscast or whatever happens here at the top. So stick around. We can answer everybody's question. We got a couple of lines open right now. If you want to get on board, 877-PLANNER. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you want to talk to Professor Rick Plum or any of the Brain Trust advisors across the country, you can reach them at their Lucia Capital Group off-air number, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour just ahead. More of the best in money information when we come back.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.